Dubai Eye
103.8. Conversation that today is being driven by a very special friend here in the studios, joining us with his thoughts and takes on some of the big stories of the day. Andre Gershel is the Director of Operations and Regional Manager at Baker & Spice. Good morning to you, sir, as always.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all, mate. It's great to have you here with us today, and thank you very much indeed for taking time out to come and speak to us. I know you're in the middle of opening a brand new venue here down at Dubai Opera, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we have a great new restaurant that's sort of our sister restaurant to Baker & Spice called Kismet, which means lucky or fortuitous, which we're opening in 9 days or 187 hours, to be precise.
The clock is running, is it?
Quite literally. I can imagine all my cooks listening to this and they just doubled their pace.
What's the concept? Obviously, we talk about very competitive food and beverage markets here in the UAE. You're trying something out down in what is a very big catchment area. A lot of people coming in for a variety of shows down at Dubai Opera. How are you going to catch the attention? What are you doing in the market?
So one of the things that I think that makes a good restaurant is it's often born out of frustration of something that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to do was try and introduce a little bit of soul food from all of the cooks and all of their backgrounds.
Nice.
So we have like 17 different nations, I think, that are represented. I just put up a picture on our Instagram account of literally 17 passports all laid out accordingly. And we have Malaysia, Poland, South Africa, India, Pakistan, Lebanon, Venezuela, Peru, Mexico. The list is tremendous. And so I asked all of those guys to sort of pick the dishes that they grew up with, because I think a great way to sort of create an idea of citizenry rather than just being an expat is to bring something from where you are from to where you are. And so we really wanted to pick small sort of soul food bites of what they grew up with.
Love that idea. Three soul food dishes from Mexico. Come on then. We're not going to ask Andre what's on there. We're going to ask you, the listener out there, what would you expect those dishes to be? If you had to choose three soul food dishes from Mexico, from Poland, South Africa, the States, what else do we have in there?
Malaysia,
Venezuela's in there.
Poland.
As well. Poland. So looking forward to that one. Obviously a busy. Do you get an opportunity to watch Netflix? Do you get an opportunity to binge watch? If somebody poses that question to you, Andre, at the weekend, what are you watching at the moment? What are you watching?
Oh, Chef's Table. That one's easy.
Yes.
So good. So good. And there's another one by an amazing author named Samin Nosrat, which is called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And it's amazing.
Is it?
Yeah, it's really good.
I've seen it advertised and I've not given it a go as yet. Is that worth it?
It's totally fascinating. I don't want to give away too much, but she kind of breaks down the importance of salt, fat, acid, and heat. And you don't have to be a cook or from a restaurant background. It's super entertaining. There's at one point, it totally changes the way you think about simple things like even soy sauce.
Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed that program.
Going to give that one a go. We're going to dive into a number of the stories that you've selected for us in just a few moments' time. So if you'd like to send in your thoughts, then feel free to do so now. If people want to find out more about the venue, Andre, let's get that one out and about so people can have a look at the Instagram feed and bits and pieces before you open in a couple of hours' time. What's the best way for them to find out information?
Please follow us on Instagram at KismetDXB, and we will hopefully be open to the public in the next 9 days to come and sort of welcome everyone in. Please, please come in. It really should be a place to make your new sort of neighborhood downtown headquarters.
Is that what it's called, Kismet?
It is, yeah, yeah. Kismet's an interesting word. It's one of these crossover words. It means the same thing in about 14 different languages.
No, really?
Really, truly. But it means sort of lucky or chance. So if you and I met in a train station in the middle of Malaysia, Poland, Mexico, it would be Kismet. That meeting would be described as.
Look at that. We talk mobile phone technology and the rise therein with Andre in just a few moments' time. Andre's in studio with me. We're working through some of the stories that have caught his eye. A dark consensus about screens and kids in Silicon Valley. Now, this sounds like the start to a Hollywood blockbuster, doesn't it?
It does. It's very, very ominous.
Sinister.
But yeah, I mean, it is very sinister. But the truth is, I know a lot of sort of my friends are starting to have kids now, and their kids are sort of glued to screens. It's super, super addictive, and it's a major issue. The New York Times came out with this article talking about how some of the sort of senior executives in the top Silicon Valley companies have shown growing concern about how much screen time their children consume. And I'll pluck just some very interesting points from the article. One was Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, said that earlier this year he would not let his nephew join social networks. Bill Gates banned cell phones categorically with his children when they were teenagers. And Steve Jobs would not let his young children near iPads. And I think it's actually interesting because it's not just the responsibility of parents to sort of monitor screen time. But no tech homes and policies are sort of cropping up across the region. And I know that even nannies are being asked to sign no phone contracts.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, we often talk here on the show about the growth of mobile phones. In fact, just yesterday there was a report out by Kaspersky here in the UAE saying that we all rely on our phones to get ourselves out of difficult social scenarios. 90% of UAE residents will admit to looking to their screens on their phones to avoid speaking to someone these days, to texting rather than calling. That human contact seems to be going out of the way. I suppose that is part of the soft skills that are disappearing and the concerns that are coming in from tech giants.
Well, I think it's that, and I think it's also an issue of the nature of screen time and how it actually affects the chemistry of our brains and the growth of different regions of our brains. But at the same time, I also see the other side, which is that coding and learning how to code is now becoming part of the curriculum for sort of young adults. And I think that is definitely also relevant. We have to accept the fact that technology plays an immensely important role in education and can be a tool. But I think what we're going to see more and more, I mean, I don't know if you have an iPhone, but there's a new element that's part of the iPhone that actually tells you your distribution of screen time, and it'll come up. And so if you've spent 2 or 3 hours on Instagram, it'll actually pop up just in time to embarrass you off of Instagram or one of the other social media channels. But it's interesting that all of a sudden we're kind of treating it like a budget, like we would a financial budget. We're starting to budget our screen time accordingly. And it doesn't just start as adults, but it starts as kids.
Interesting you mentioned there about coding, because that comes on the day that Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid, the Vice President Ruler of Dubai, has hailed coding as the language of the future after attending a graduation ceremony for the 1 million Arab coders, an initiative set up to train 1 million Arabs in the key skill of computer programming over a 3-year period. More than 22,000 people from across the globe completed the program this year, a program that will create new opportunities. The ceremony was held at Vox Cinemas at the Mall of the Emirates in Al Barsha last night and prompted the calls from His Highness as well. Bitar's been in touch saying, hi, what best coding languages for kids? Where to find it? Bitar, we'll get you more details on that one. That was just in response, wasn't it, to this story coming out. I was just thinking about it during the news there. The fact that this is the news, or this is the message coming out of Silicon Valley, which have been championing technology and our translation of our worlds onto our phones. We were just talking about how much we use our phones in studio as well. When the warnings start coming from the creators, then you know that we need to sit up and listen, surely.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of like a Terminator movie happening in advance. But I don't think we're quite as close to the machines taking over as perhaps we're all worried about. But the truth is, I always like talking to parents about this, because I think a lot of it revolves around the idea of self-control and teaching kids from a very early age that you need to sort of budget your screen time. And I know there's a lot of studies that show how much more verbal kids are when they don't spend as much time necessarily using a screen, but rather engaging their creativity, engaging their imagination, spending time outside. And I think that those are important things to also focus on, too. I think it's an issue of balance.
What are your tech rules in your household? I'm not going to ask Joe, because it's far too militant, you know. It's not the 1880s, you know, Joe.
I know it isn't.
Let them code.
We can always switch the Wi-Fi off when we need to and change the password.
Best punishment is having them try and guess the new Wi-Fi password. I love that.
It's not. We're
trying to outthink their parents, trying to recode the system.
They can't control themselves, neither can you, Tom.
Thank you very much indeed. Do you have tech rules? Do you have mobile phone rules in the restaurants or not?
Absolutely, but that's more of a sanitary thing. No phones in the kitchen whatsoever.
What about your
front of house staff?
Well, what about guests as well? What about are you able to limit in any way?
Oh, that's such a tough one. I mean, it's a personal pet peeve when somebody's super loud in an intimate restaurant. Yes. I think everybody gets annoyed by that. But thankfully, we haven't really run into that problem. Maybe now we have a new restaurant that's more nighttime oriented. It'll be a little bit something that we pay attention to more. But I think for the most part, when it comes to mobile phone policy, I mean, we offer Wi-Fi. So it's sort of counterintuitive to say that you can't use your phone but offer free Wi-Fi.
And if you didn't offer Wi-Fi, then that would turn people away at the moment.
I mean, it'd be like Joe's house. Yeah. It'd be crazy. It'd be madness.
You'd have to guess.
You'd have to pay board
you'd
games.
You'd have to guess.
And I, oh, my goodness me. You'd actually have to speak to each other.
God forbid we let that happen.
I want to talk restaurants now if we can. We've got Andre here in studio with us. We've been talking about restaurants throughout the morning. He's Director of Operations and Regional Manager at Baker and Spice. They're about to celebrate a brand new opening down at Dubai Opera with a new brand a little later on this week. We'll have more details on that very shortly. But talk to me about restaurant chains. We know that mid-market restaurant chains in general are suffering at the moment. They're looking to rebrand themselves in many ways or find their position in a very competitive high street market. What are they doing over in the States?
Well, there's an interesting sort of dilemma that they're having from a labor perspective. And that's obviously a very important cost center for the restaurant operator. But I read this great article in Bloomberg News that talks about how senior citizens are replacing teenagers as fast food workers. And I think there's two sort of powerful trends at work. One is a labor shortage, and it's a very tight job market in almost 5 decades in the U.S. And there's also propensity for longer living Americans and citizens of the world in general to keep working, even part-time, to supplement often meager sort of retirement savings. And what's interesting is from 2014 to 2024, we're expecting a 4.5% shift in workers between the age of 65 to 74. Mm. And I think traditionally we always kind of think as like flipping burgers is your kind of teenage summer job, right? At least in the States, that's very prevalent. Whereas people sort of between 16 and 24 are expected to shrink in terms of the way that they engage in, let's say, those labor-intensive fast food jobs. Probably off coding, probably off using screens, to be very honest. But I think it's actually, there's something kind of charming about the idea of coming in and seeing sort of an older workforce in that particular segment. And it's interesting.
Is there also something in the fact that they understand those sort of soft skills a little more? I mean, we go back to that conversation about younger generations finding it difficult to interact between humans at the moment. They're almost forgetting those skills of welcoming somebody.
So the interesting thing is that in terms of labor statistics, they're talking about punctuality, that it's much better with older cohorts, friendly demeanor. And I know that some years ago, there was a discussion also in the UK about how senior citizens were engaging in airports. Mm. Airport information desks were now being chaired for the most part by senior citizens. And because that they were friendly, wanted to help, wanted to give directions, and also wanted to feel useful. And I think, as healthcare becomes more advanced, 65 is the new 55, 45 as it sort of goes on. And I think people want to engage and they want to feel useful. And I think that's actually how you do end up kind of staying young forever.
Fascinating that you've brought this this piece to time, because Joe and I were discussing another piece that appeared in the Telegraph newspaper earlier on today, an opinion piece by Esther Williams in the Telegraph entitled "In Praise of Chain Restaurants, You Will Miss Them When They Have Gone." It basically highlights the concern of Esther and others that a number of those mid-market chain restaurants that have long dominated our high streets over the UK, but across many parts of the world and been franchised in other parts of the world, are now sort of losing their place as well. I mean, will they be missed? Is there something to be said for the role of a chain restaurant? You know what you get when you go in?
So I think absolutely, and what you're seeing is a massive market polarization when it comes to fast casual restaurants. So everything is kind of becoming a Costa, Starbucks, prêt-à-manger, and you see massive companies that are starting to sort of eat up each other until you become sort of one or two companies. And it was kind of funny because I was watching the Simpsons episode recently and was talking about how there will only be two restaurants in the future, and it will be Taco Bell or Wendy's. And so all currency will be Taco Bell dollars. So like that's the only way that you'd be able to sort of trade. But I do think there's a little bit of a problem on that. On the high end, what you're seeing is more independent restaurants that are budding up in sort of developing areas, whereas in saturated economies, ground floor retail across all of Western Europe and North America is getting hit really, really badly. And it's getting hit because most people are using services like Deliveroo or Foodsta. And what it means is that from an operator's perspective, there's not really a great need to have a brick and mortar presence in the same way. Mm. And so what ends up happening is those shops close up. Bigger companies who can afford to take more spaces in real estate and just want market exposure take it, even at a loss.
Yeah.
And the guys that were there before end up just having a central kitchen in a delivery-centric way that allows them to generate business through delivery because people don't necessarily leave to go out and eat quite as much as they used to.
And I suppose that is one of the big challenges. And we've seen it with Jamie's Italian. We've seen it with Oaxaca, with Byron to a certain degree as well. Wagamama.
Absolutely.
The move for delivery and the demand for delivery is outweighing the need for 30 restaurants on high streets in a particular country, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, look, the nature of high street restaurant trade has totally been shifted by these third-party delivery companies.
Yeah.
And as they grow and as they become more powerful, it's a little bit like Amazon and what Amazon has done for the most part to local postal services. So local postal services have gotten totally hammered. And now the largest client of the U.S. Postal Service is Amazon. If Amazon were to decide to start their own postal service, it would bankrupt the U.S. postal system. And you're seeing that also as the case across other sort of saturated and developed economies. And the same thing is true of fast food.
So we got Ross Edgley. We were talking about him in the studio a little earlier on. Who is Ross Edgley and why should we be championing his achievements?
So Ross Edgley is this tremendous athlete and swimmer. And he's just completed this amazing feat of actually swimming across and around the total circumference of Britain. So it's about a 2,782 kilometer swim, which took him 157 days.
Why?
Yeah, well, that's a good question as well. By the way, the article starts with saying, so, is he a masochist? Which I kind of can sort of resonate with, but the physical endurance required to do something like this is unbelievable. He talks about going through 5 kg of Vaseline just to sort of ensure that he has streamlined friction through the water. 5 kg.
Wow.
Yeah, which is sort of unbelievable. If you think about
I think I've still got the same pot in my in my drawer that I've had for the last 5 years. Because you don't need much, do you?
Well, I mean, ideally not. But what my favorite part of this article was, it says, in the course of his 5-month-long Great British Swim, Edgley raced ferries, stopped boats, braved storms, and swam with countless dolphins, hundreds of jellyfish things, and saw every single seal. And he became a connoisseur of the nation's waters. He said, Scotland tasted really nice. The Irish Sea, he says, after consideration, was organic, and the Humber Estuary was straight-up fertilizer. So I kind of like that. I mean, it's probably not something that you would necessarily think of during a very, very long swim like that, but the idea is that during the entire time, he's tasting the different waters as he swims around Britain.
But it's amazing that he can actually taste the water, because he tries to describe what it feels like to have his tongue disintegrate because the flesh of his tongue was stripped off by the salt water.
Yeah, it's actually something that's quite common with long endurance swims in salt water. And he goes on to describe it in gut-wrenching detail in the article. But the other interesting thing is that after 150-day swim, and I was thinking about this as well, he says he was quite bad going back on land and that his muscle structure had totally changed as an athlete. Mm. And he had to do sort of physical therapy to start walking on land again. His upper body had become extremely strong where his legs had become deficient and suffered from sort of borderline atrophy. And he's been doing leg strengthening and balance training to come back on land.
That is an extraordinary feat of endurance. And in fact, let's just wrap things up because we've got our very own endurance athlete going through his own extraordinary feat here in the UAE at the moment as part of Dubai Fitness Challenge.
Yeah, that's right. So we have a guy who's doing 30 marathons in 30 days. I know he's gotten quite a bit of coverage over the past couple of days.
Our friend Marcus, yeah.
Yeah, Marcus Smith. So, and I just think that's an amazing idea. And I just don't understand how you get to day 20 and you get up and you go, today I'm going to run another marathon.
Another marathon, yeah.
And I know he has people sort of joining him along the runs. It's actually, I find it super inspirational. So he starts at Satwa at 5 a.m. and runs towards Jumeirah and Kite Beach. So please try and join him. Give him some support.
Yeah, he's encouraging people to do that.
Yeah.
I feel a bit bad as well because we were all over it in the first week. Well done, Marcus. We're going to be part of that. Yeah. You know, second week, completely forgotten him. You know,
big promises, mate.
Until the last week, and we'll be all over it again. Go, well done, Marcus. What an amazing cheat.
Day 27.
Where have you been for the last 3 weeks?
Thinking of you, following you on
fair
Instagram.
Fair weather supporters. That is an amazing cheat. It's 30 marathons in 30 days for the 30 by 30 Dubai Fitness Challenge. We're out of time. But we do need to reserve enough time to thank our very special guest, Andre Goeschel, here in studio. Andre, you've got that opening just around the corner. If people want to find out more about it.
Come and please follow us on Instagram at KismetDXB. We'll be there. Chef Ruby will be there. Chef Edgar, Chef Andrea, Adrian, Michael, Jordana, Manish, Sumantha, Sandra. There's an amazing, incredible team all behind this. And I hope that they're listening. We love you all dearly, and we'll see you at the opening.
And in the meantime, obviously, things going very well for Baker & Spice. More openings all across the region.
Yeah, but I think one of the most exciting things I want to just talk about very, very quickly is our farmer's market, which is reopened.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And we always sort of welcome new stalls, but one of my absolute favorites is this new guy that's working with us, a guy named Rafi Vartanian, who's working with a company called Ziba Nuts. And Ziba Nuts is an amazing company that's set up to reestablish Afghanistan as sort of the artisanal provider of heirloom nuts and dried fruits for the region. And the orchards that he is picking from have literally been around for millennia. Ziba Nuts can be found at our farmers market. And the amazing thing is it helps combat the almost 80% unemployment rate for women in Afghanistan. It's exclusively run by women.
Where's the farmers market?
It's at the base of Executive Towers in Business Bay. It starts on Fridays and Saturdays at 7 a.m. You can come and see Jo there at 7:01. She is never, ever late. It is incredible.
Looking forward to it. If people want to find out more about that, and of course, Baker & Spice website.
At Farmers Market ME on our Instagram, and at Baker & Spice ME for Middle East.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.